previously on Podcasts Without Pretense.
It's times like these that I wish I had listened to what my mom told me when I was a kid.
You know, so I put the lime in the coconut, and I'm just still waiting.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Aya Zachter. And I'm Eric Sandine.
Eric Sandine is not here. And no. Aya, you're supposed to drink them both up. You put the lime in the coconut, and then you drink them both up.
You should have told me that in the last episode. We argued about this for 30 minutes, and you never brought that up.
Such a silly host.
Can't believe.
Man, busting out a Harry Nilsson reference in your previously on. I'm sure all half a dozen listeners that we still have appreciate that reference.
Well, it was weird. The reason why I even have that song on my brain, or had it at the time when we recorded that episode, because that was a different time.
Right. That was a week ago.
The audio listeners, they can hear me nodding right now. my son had a bit of a speech impediment. And so to get his L's to sound right, he had to say, put the lime in the coconut. So he would randomly start singing the song. And I'm like, how do you know that song of all the things? He's like, well, Steve sings it. And I'm like, who is Steve? And you know how the story ends because you were here last week. So anyway.
Sure, but let the audience know, those who didn't tune in last week.
Okay, so Steve, it was like his speech teacher.
Gotcha.
There you go. So that's why he was saying, just randomly put the lime in the coconut, which I thought he had watched some like Quentin Tarantino movie, because I'm pretty sure it's in one of those.
He could have seen an old classic episode of The Muppets, because Kermit sings it. In an episode of The Muppets, he's in the hospital, and his doctors and nurses slowly become witch doctors around him as the song continues to go on and on. It's a classic Muppets episode.
Well, there is the instance where my son took his iPad, and he came to me at like one night. He goes, "I don't like this," and he shows me what's on his iPad, and it was Breaking Bad, and I was like, "One, thank you for telling me you don't like this. Two, locking it to kids section now, because I forgot this was an option." So that was another reason why I'm like, what is he watching? So that's why lime in the coconut was such an interesting thing. So this is almost like a repeat of last week's episode.
Yeah, we're sorry about that.
So if you're watching this live at gfqlive.tv, we've got a chat room where it's very quiet. I'm in there. I'm writing all kinds of things about Jonathan.
Like, I was about to say, since Eric's not there, then there's not... The two hosts can't just talk to each other behind the third host's back. Because as we all know, I'm too good to join the chat room.
I also wanted to explain why we are recording late on Wednesdays. Well, this is going to change anyway, so never mind that. Yeah. Today we're recording late at 9:30 instead of 9 o'clock Eastern. Because, first of all, Eric's not here because of what? What sounds like the most made-up excuse I've ever heard. His cat has fleas, so he wants us to do the show. So I said, okay, that sounds like bullshit. And then Jonathan was late because he injured a friend. No, wait a minute. That's not right reporting. Jonathan,
no,
what happened?
A friend was injured. Okay, so a friend of mine was doing some work. I think he was helping set up a stage, like a theatrical stage. Fell off a 12-foot ladder onto his back. Broke several ribs. Had a partially collapsed lung. Suffered a mild concussion. And so a group of friends have all been taking turns bringing food over to his house for my buddy and his wife, who's also my friend, and a person who's staying with them, to try and help them, because they've been looking after the guy while he's recovering. And, these are friends who are also in the Georgia Renaissance Festival. So once I heard that this guy was really badly hurt, I mean, this is a guy who doesn't, he has a very high tolerance for pain, and he's clearly in pain. Once I knew that he was hurt, I ended up actually writing to the director for the Renaissance Festival and said, if you need a little extra help because this guy's hurt, let me know. So now for the first couple of weeks until this guy's in fighting shape, I'm going to be the bad guy at the Georgia Renaissance Festival, and now I've got to fight people.
You mean that literally? Swords.
Yeah. I mean, I got to use – there are literally rapier fights worked into the festival show. I have to learn them in a month before it opens, and learn this character within a month, a character who's a scripted character who has lines, not to mention figure out how I'm going to do all the improv bits throughout the day, in a month. So that's going to be fun. It'll be a challenge.
This story is nowhere near as funny as I was hoping. So in deference to your friend, I'm not going to even say anything stupid. I did say stupid stuff in the chat room, but
well, it was a really serious injury. He's recovering, so that's good. But yeah, they're just at a point where that family is, you know, in order to look after him, it's just rough for them to be able to also go out and get food and that kind of thing. So all the friends are kind of pitching in and helping out while he recovers. So that's why I'm late. I had forgotten that we were doing that. My wife had told me, but I've just been so scattered because of South by Southwest and everything. Because I started work not this past Monday, but the Monday before, worked all the way through the week, flew to Austin on Friday, worked all the weekend, flew back to Atlanta on yesterday, went into the office again today, wrote a script, 2 write-ups, plus did a live stream. So yeah, I'm just like, I haven't figured out where I am yet, like in the grand scheme of things.
So how was South by Southwest this year? I've never been. I heard it's already over, like as in not the whole thing, but like it's been done. People think it's not cool anymore. Is it still cool, even though Lucha Underground was there, which sounds like it'd be fun?
I don't know how cool it was. I'd say that, I had a good time. There were some fun installations. Since TV has gotten really big again, there were a couple of television series that had some fun interactive installations. Mr. Robot had like a carnival set up, including a Ferris wheel and skee ball and pinball and arcade games, and all on free play. And so I rode the Ferris wheel a couple times. That was fun. Game of Thrones had a walkthrough exhibit, and you could also get a picture on the throne, which I did. That's my new Facebook profile picture. There was a Star Wars TIE fighter that was apparently about life size, but I never got a chance to see that. It was on the other side of town from where I mostly was. So there's some stuff like that that was kind of fun, like just this interactive, larger-than-life kind of stuff. I don't know about the parties, because really I was too busy supporting the Atlanta stuff to really venture out. And also, I'm just not much fun. I don't drink, and I don't particularly like being around people who are drinking a lot. I mean, like, a lot. So I tend to just avoid that. So I didn't really hang out with that too much. But the panels were fine. I actually went to 3 of them and thought that they were pretty interesting. And then I moderated a panel. So that happened. And then
were you asked to moderate, or did you just decide to step in? Was it just getting out of hand? You just like,
let me put it this way. I wasn't asked to moderate. I was told to moderate. There is a difference.
Interesting. You were assigned. Did you moderate half-assed then because you weren't given an option?
I moderated a panel about the app Yik Yak. Are you familiar with Yik Yak?
Surprisingly, yes, because somebody explained it to me because their children use it.
Yik Yak is, well, you're not supposed to use it unless you're over 17. I moderated a panel on Yik Yak. So
isn't that like it's like an anonymous social network kind of thing that's based on proximity, right?
Yes.
There you go.
Yeah, and the second person to ask a question at my panel was Baratunde, former contributor to The Onion, author of How to Be Black, internet celebrity who's much better known than I am. So when he got up to ask a question, I was like, oh no. I was having an experience where I was thinking, well, at least this particular thing that's happening is pretty much confined to this room. Because South by Southwest does not allow videotaping of panels. You can't do that. You're not allowed to. So I thought, well, it's pretty much kept here. That's fine. And then when Baratunde asked a question, I'm like, okay, no, it's not. but it was just rough. You know, it was a challenge to moderate the panel. I don't think I did a particularly great job, but all the video work I did, I'm proud of. I'm proud of our crew who busted their butts over several days to try and get as much done as possible. But yeah, if I had it to do over again, I would definitely do the panel differently than it turned out. It wasn't like it was terrible. I just wasn't satisfied with my particular performance. Granted, I was the least important thing about that panel. They were, the founders were more important. By the way, do you know the founders' names? Don't look it up. But do you know their names?
Not in the least.
One of them is named Tyler Droll.
Okay.
The other one is named Brooks Buffington.
Is he a porn star?
No. At least not that I know of. Is that his given
name? Buffington.
Yes. Yes, Brooks Buffington.
Buffington and Droll. That sounds like a comedy duo waiting to happen.
I know. I introduced them. So so anyway.
You sound beaten up. I mean, you're right.
It was a hard week of work, and it's still not over, right? I haven't had a day off for more than a week now, so I'm a little worn down. Also, you know, to do those videos, you know how it is, Iaz. When you're about to do a video, you've got to be high energy. You know, you've got to maintain that energy throughout the video, because if you don't, it really shows. Mm-hmm. So we shot videos all week long, and so you having to keep maintaining your energy level, plus, you know, you're running around to different locations so you get better backdrops for whatever the video is. It just takes a lot out of you. So I haven't recovered yet, and I'm still pretty tired. I will say, however, the South By trip, there were a lot of really great things that happened. I mean, like I said, I'm really proud of most of the work I did. But also, more importantly, I ate so many awesome tacos.
Yeah, if you weren't following Jonathan on Twitter, you missed out on his taco fascination. Although, I don't know if there were any pictures or videos of these tacos, which I'm surprised.
I uploaded some pictures. I uploaded a picture of the Roscoe, which is a chicken and waffles taco.
Oh, right. I saw that one. That thing didn't look like a taco, but that's...
It was, though. Like, when you folded that sucker up, it was a tuck. It was a thing of beauty. It was so good. I had it twice because I liked it so much the first time. I went back.
Wait, hang on. The amount of energy and happiness you have about just talking tacos, okay?
Yeah. Versus, I perked up, right?
Yeah, you got excited. You're happy again. So anytime you have to do a video from now on, if you got nothing inside, you got to be like, I'm talking tacos.
What I gotta hope is that Torchy's opens up an Atlanta branch, because those were some damn fine tacos. The other thing, Iaz, have you ever been to Texas?
Never. I have never been to Texas.
So everyone that I ran into in Austin, Texas was remarkably friendly. And I'm used to people being friendly in Atlanta. Atlanta's a very friendly city. But Austin... Well, first, it felt like everyone was genuinely friendly. You don't always get that in Atlanta. But it was weird. Like, it was weird in a great way that you would come in, you would talk to people, they'd want to get to know you. Like, it was nice. And that was a great experience, too. The people in Austin were all phenomenal, really friendly and accommodating. So that was great. I mean, it was, like I said, it was a lot of work. I wish I had had time to see more. I actually ended up only having about 2 hours of free time to really explore stuff before I had to do more work. So I didn't get to see as much. I didn't get over to the Star Wars stuff. And the only party I really went to was I stuck around at Speakeasy, which was the bar that I was staying in for the How Stuff Works work. That was our base of operations, and I stayed there after the Stuff You Should Know podcast had concluded. I stayed there for about an hour, so I left at around 9 or 9:30, not too late. because I'm boring. And then I went back to the Airbnb that we were staying at. Six guys in an Airbnb that had three beds
and sounds one cozy.
Couch.
You were saying how friendly Texas was. I guess you guys got pretty friendly.
Yeah, no. But see, that's the problem is that we aren't from Texas, so we were not friendly. No, we had three beds. We had three bedrooms, and then we had a couch. And then we ended up going out and buying two air mattresses to supplement the rest. And so there were three people sleeping in the living room, two air mattresses and a couch. And then we had three bedrooms, including the master bedroom. So I claimed one of the bedrooms for the first two nights because I had so much video work. I was concerned that if I did not have the privacy and I couldn't just rest and focus, that I would do a really crappy job. But then after Saturday, I guess after Sunday. So yeah, Friday night and Saturday night, I stayed in the room. Sunday, after I was finished doing even more video, I gave the room up to someone else on the crew so that they could get some sleep. And then Sunday and Monday, I stayed in the living room because I figured at that point, most of my work was done. I had one video to shoot on Monday, a live stream to do on Monday, and I had a podcast to record on Monday. But I only had to look decent for two of those. So I gave the room up to a crew member and stayed in the living room that night and the following night, it turned out to be fine because first of all, I'm 10 years older than just about everyone else who was there. So I would get back to the house, and since I don't drink or anything, I'd just get back to the house. I would relax and fall asleep, and I would be dead asleep by the time they got back later that night because they'd be out partying and stuff or shooting video. And so it ended up not being a big deal. In fact, I probably could have not bothered with the private room at all just because I fell asleep before anyone else did. But I was trying to play it safe. However, next year, I will book my own room.
Sounds like a plan. Today, by the way, is March 16th. We're recording this. It's Steve Austin Day, 316. And I do not have any beer today, which is unfortunate. Do you have anything that you're going to you're going to open a can of whoop-ass today?
No. Instead, I'm going to look at WWE Roadblock again and wonder exactly why they bothered to have it.
So since Eric isn't here, we're going to talk wrestling. If you don't professional
fuck
wrestling.
Fuck you.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. It's like, no, that's fine. You don't have to like it, but you might not like the next conversation that's about to happen here.
You didn't like my rambling diatribe about South by, so it doesn't matter. Let's continue to not like this episode.
Okay, so wait. Is it me or the audience? Who are we yelling at right now?
Everybody.
Okay. Fuck everybody. That's another title.
I need tacos.
I really would like some tacos now. I wish it wasn't so late. Anyway, so I thought the whole idea of Roadblock, conceptually, is really just a test of the network streaming to see how it's going to do for Mania, just to see how it's going to hold up. Because there's a giant gap between... And I believe when it first rolled out, when the network first rolled out, there was, I think, Elimination Chamber was the warm-up one to see how the network would survive. And for Mania, it's been fine the past couple of years, so I'm sure it'll be fine this year. But that's what I'm assuming the reason was for this. It's like, well, you know what? Let's try it out. More of a test because nothing of note storyline-wise happened on the show. So
I think ultimately it doesn't really matter because I don't think that Mania is – I mean, people will watch it because it's WrestleMania. But I can't imagine that it's in that much demand. The one match I think people are interested to see how it plays out is Undertaker and Shane. But, I mean, I don't think people are particularly curious about Brock Lesnar versus Dean Ambrose. And I certainly don't think people are clamoring for Triple H versus Roman Reigns. So
that's going to be a train wreck, essentially, right? So the match itself could be fine. Reigns versus Triple H. This guy, they've been trying to push down our throats, Reigns, for 2 years now?
And 2 years, yeah.
He's getting somewhat booed. And the thing that's worse than that, he's getting indifference from the audience. Like, people are not, like, actually actively booing him. They're just not saying anything. So it sounds really weak. So you got this problem. The audience at WrestleMania is usually quite, they call it smart. So they like certain wrestlers that who are not named Roman Reigns. There's a good chance there's going to be so much craziness with the audience because they've sold something like 70,000 tickets or 80,000 tickets for this thing so far. So imagine what's going to happen when this guy comes out, just like last year where the audience turned on him easily. They were booing everything Reigns did, any offense he had, and he's going to have way more offense and he's probably going to win this year. So I'm just really curious how that's going to play out.
On top of that, you've got Triple H, who's the heel. He's the bad guy. But there's a problem with that because Triple H also is the face of booking for NXT. And pretty much universally, people think that NXT is a better product than mainline WWE stuff is. And so Triple H is viewed as a positive personality on the NXT side. He comes out and he greets the crowd, and the crowd loves him because they love the product. They love NXT. So you've got a guy who is coming across as a babyface on one product, but he's booked as a heel on the other product. And so the smart fans are cheering Triple H for two reasons. He's not Roman Reigns, and also they like what he's done over at NXT. It is a complicated thing. And part of the real problem here, and it's, you know, the cat is out of the bag, so it's too late now. But part of the real problem here is that kayfabe doesn't exist anymore. And kayfabe, for those who don't know, is the veil. You know, in front of kayfabe, wrestling is presented as real. Behind, there are all the secrets, like all the things that are going on behind the scenes where the stories are being put together. People are told whether or not they're going to go over, meaning they're going to win, or they're going to job, or which means they're going to lose. Kayfabe doesn't exist anymore. It's been stripped away. They still want to keep the booking secret, but all the other elements of kayfabe are gone, including the fact that you have the same guy coming across as a hero on one product and the bad guy on the other product. And you need at least some semblance of a foundation there for fans to buy into it. So I think that's a big problem. And also, you know, all right, so WWE Roadblock, I've heard the argument that it wasn't meant to push any stories forward or change anything. And I'm like, well, why call it Roadblock then? Because that's in reference to the road to WrestleMania. And Roadblock was not a roadblock on the road to WrestleMania. If anything, it was maybe a speed bump. So I thought it was pretty ridiculous. The Dean Ambrose Triple H match was actually a pretty good match.
Yeah, it was good.
First, Triple H worked his ass off. And mm-hmm. I don't say that lightly. I personally don't care for Triple H's ring style, but he did a great job in that Ambrose match, which unfortunately sets the bar for Roman Reigns, who wrestles a totally different style than Dean Ambrose does. And if Ambrose can get that good of a match with Triple H, then Roman Reigns sure as hell better at least equal it for WrestleMania. Yeah, it's not going to happen, and that's a problem.
That's
because
what I'm saying. It's not going to. So here's the thing: like it could be. They could be working on this match, and they have. Let's imagine they've worked on this match for like 3 months. Think like Hogan Warrior, because when Hogan Warrior happened in WrestleMania 6, you got two guys who essentially they have limited in-ring abilities, or at least they've demonstrated limited in-ring abilities. If you ever watch Hogan in Japan, it's really weird because he pulls out all kinds of crazy shit like spinning arm bars, and it's like, you can do that? Who knew that? Anyway, Hogan Warrior looked like, by all accounts, would be a mess. And it turned out they booked a really good match because they spent like months on it. They practiced it. They had a good agent to help with the thing. So if they really are trying, maybe they've actually put a lot of time into this. This is Triple H's match. They probably will do a lot of time into this so it doesn't totally fail. And Reigns is supposed to be Vince's pet project, which I don't know how often you'd have to hear the audience boo the thing you do. I mean, like, look, we did this show, which we do, and we have Twitter, people could totally run us down if everyone was booing us for this. I think at some point we'd be like, maybe we need to change direction, you know?
Or maybe we'll just have a Skype call between the three of us and not make it a fucking podcast.
Yeah, it'll just be, hey, how's it going? And then, like, we won't record it, and that'd be the end of that. And it would have more swears.
And I would talk about wrestling, and Eric would just start drinking beer.
Yeah, that's the thing, though. We'd keep a video up of it, though. That'd be a good thing to have to say. An animated GIF of that when he's not in? That'd be a good idea. It's like, what do you think, Eric? And like, all right.
No, oh, I'm sorry. He's drinking. We'll have to ask him later.
Or picking cat fleas out.
Yeah, so...
Fleas are no laughing matter, by the way, so check your pets.
At any rate, I think a lot of people are underwhelmed by the card for WrestleMania. I know people are still holding out hope that the championship will become a fatal four-way with Lesnar, Ambrose, Triple H, and Reigns. People were hoping that Ambrose would go over Triple H at Roadblock, which was a really like a super long shot. Although if Ambrose had gone over and if they had turned Reigns heel and then heel went over Ambrose for WrestleMania, I think that might have actually worked for Reigns.
I think
like if Reigns had turned heel and won.
If Reigns turns heel at any time between now and Mania, that's going to work. But the problem is you can't do that right now because Triple H is a part of the bad guy side. And he's
you'd have
authority,
to have,
and then
you'd have to have like a double turn, which would make no sense.
Especially so with the Shane McMahon storyline.
Right. You'd have Shane to get the wins. Yep. You gotta get the belt off Triple H and give it to a face. You gotta have Reigns turn heel and then beat the face. And then you could even have it after Shane comes in, maybe Triple H goes off TV for a while. You could have Triple H turn face when he comes back and tell the heel champion Reigns, hey, you never beat me. You never beat the game. So I want a shot at the title. Have Reigns go over Triple H again as Triple H as being a face, cementing Reigns as a heel champion. You suddenly got someone that the crowd could actually be interested in seeing. Now, they want to see someone beat him, but that's what a good heel is. A good heel, people want to see lose.
Yeah, but so let's run this scenario, by the way. So we had something similar. There was the New Day. When they first came out, they were baby faces. Good old clapping people. They were super happy. And people thought they were just awful. When they started turning into heels, where they were just saying the craziest shit, playing trombones and doing whatever else, people started cheering them, even though they were the bad guys, and they're being turned like right now to be faces again. Won't the same damn thing happen to Reigns? Because like everyone's like, fuck you for being here. It's like, oh, you're finally turned to a bad guy. Won't all the people who were booing him actually cheer him at this point?
I don't think so. I think he would be the kind of heel, like he'd be the sort of heel that Seth Rollins was, which is that he's the sort of heel that the smart fans appreciate. But he'll come across as such a bad guy that most crowds would boo him.
I don't know if people appreciate him. People appreciated Seth Rollins' in-ring work, his ability in the ring. He could talk pretty well. He could do pretty much anything and work with anybody and make them look good. Reigns doesn't really do that. He has good matches with guys who are good, but he doesn't carry anything. So, and
see,
he can't
I think
talk
that's why.
Shit.
I think that's no. He can talk. He just can't talk scripts. So that's the other problem is that WWE scripts everything out now. So guys aren't given like, here are the things that we need you to get over and just go out there and do it. Instead, they're given a script where they have to memorize the stuff. And he doesn't come across as genuine. But in his interviews where he's just being himself, he's much more compelling. So I think if they drop the whole scripted approach with him, let him be himself a bit, that would help. I also think that if they turn him heel, then he has to get better because heels traditionally are the ones who are in charge of a match in the middle of a match. They're the ones who are dictating the pace and what's happening. Generally speaking, it's very rare that you have a face who's calling the match. So he would have to get better. And it would eventually make his future face turn more likely to work. Because telling everybody that he's a hero when they don't want him and forcing him to be that hero when they don't want him, that's a surefire way to lose. The weirdest thing is that they've got history of this that they can point to. History that's related to Roman Reigns, because this is what happened with The Rock. When The Rock, before he was The Rock, when they were trying to make him a face and he was just being this big smiling baby face in matches, no one accepted him. It wasn't until he turned heel and became, you know, the people's champion version of The Rock, people started to notice him. And then eventually people started to really like him, even though he was still acting as a heel. And then he was sort of a tweener, kind of like Stone Cold was, until eventually he just became full-on babyface again, except he's a babyface with attitude. So they've got precedence for this. I don't understand why they don't just learn from their past and try and capitalize on it. It makes no sense.
Yeah, that is a really interesting point. I mean, I think I've heard in other podcasts are like, the WWE has their own network that they could watch at any time and see how all of this shit worked. It's like, okay, so you have this good guy and he doesn't lose, right? You build him up like a monster for a while. They did this with Brock Lesnar like in 2002. Like they know how to do this. It was fairly recent they could do this. You have somebody win or you let them develop over time instead of them immediately pushing them up top there, because that takes a lot of work for that to happen. But this idea that they don't know what they're doing when they've obviously made stars before. They could just copy their own shit. It's Steve Austin Day. Just when Roman Reigns was acting like Steve Austin, like breaking all kinds of shit like months ago, that was cool. It was interesting. He's beating up everybody. He's no longer just like, oh, well, the odds are against us or against me. I'll beat you. It's like, I can and I will. It's like, fuck you. I'm going to destroy you for this. This is awful. I'm not accepting this kind of thing. The other thing is, I think a lot of it has to do with go ahead.
No. Go ahead. Finish your thought.
Oh, yeah. A lot of the stuff has to do with Stephanie McMahon being such a big heel now because there's no comeuppance. She consistently can talk down any of the men. She can out-talk like almost every guy on the roster.
And she's amazing on the stick.
She destroys them entirely, and there's nothing the guys can do about it because, well, hitting a woman, that's insane. In the Attitude Era, that was actually okay. It's a whole different time 20 years ago, but like almost that's a long time ago. You still shouldn't do it, but that's a different show then. Now they're like, oh, by the way, so that lady was running for Senate or something, so we definitely need to make sure that the company doesn't show anything like this. But there's no comeuppance for this person. So no matter how good you get, no matter how great you are, there's always this like bitch slap. Like, you stay down here, I'm up here, and you'll never get past it. The reason why Austin got over is because he got over on McMahon. Like, he beat his boss. If you never beat the boss, like, that's just idiotic. It's just...
Well, it's only idiotic if the boss is a heel, right? Yeah. It's only idiotic if you have this authority that is constantly behaving in a self-serving way, ostensibly in the name of it's good for business, which is that's been the narrative for the last couple of years. That's what brings us to the Shane O'Mac versus Undertaker match, right? Like, if Shane wins, he gets control of Raw, and thus in that way Stephanie gets her comeuppance because her own brother takes away her power on the main show for WWE. If they don't have Shane go over, I don't see what the point was of even booking that match. If they do have Shane go over, what the hell does that do to Undertaker, seeing it's a guy who's only ever lost at WrestleMania once, and that was to Brock Lesnar?
Yeah.
Unless you have, like, all the Wyatts come in and somehow sabotage things, or Mick Foley comes in and starts beating up on Undertaker to give Shane an advantage, there's just no credible way for Shane to win in a Hell in the Cell match, which is supposed to be Undertaker's specialty match. Like, I don't see an easy way out with that.
This storyline is extremely vague. There's like not enough details as to, one, why is the Undertaker okay with fighting Shane McMahon when Vince told the Undertaker to do it? Is he a bad guy now? Are people going to boo The Undertaker at WrestleMania? Don't they want Shane to win? Because if Shane wins, that means the Authority is essentially fired. Also, they said that Shane would get Raw. Does that mean the Authority has Thursday Night SmackDown and any other show? There's been zero explanation to any of those questions, by the way. It's just been, well, if Shane wins, he gets control of Raw. Undertaker will be there, and he's willing to fight Shane. And they've had interactions, just like one, I think. But it makes zero sense. And this idea that you have a 50-year-old taking on, a 46-year-old part-timer versus part-timer in a Hell in a Cell, which means it can be sloppy like crazy, and they don't have to actually wrestle. They can just, like, fight.
Slam each other into the wall.
The thing I'm expecting is there has to be, like you were saying with the Wyatts, there has to be, like, 20 people interfering with this. Like, every wrestler who has ever been a Texan will fucking show up. Because the Taker needs to lose to get rid of the Authority. So in theory, either Taker just lies down and says, fuck it, I don't want the Authority here anyway, which explains why he would take a loss, because he chose to take the loss. Or we're going to have, like, no finish, which makes no sense at WrestleMania, because that's the one that's supposed to have all the clean finishes. So it's a really – that's an intriguing thing to watch, as in there's no real good way to write your way out of this. So I'm very curious how they're going to do it, because they got to do something. Time's ticking.
Yeah, I got to admit that if I were sitting there thinking, like, who do I book against The Undertaker, Shane would not have jumped to the top of my list. The guy has been known to take some crazy bumps in the past, but that was 10 years ago, more than 10 years ago. So it's really weird to see. I assume that he's going to go over. I've heard that there were tickets on sale for events that had mistakenly already been titled Raw versus WWE, which suggests that there's a brand split coming up, which we've seen before. I don't know that their roster can really handle being split in half. They're already down so many superstars who are on the injured list. It seems weird to, hey, let's divide these guys up so there's even fewer of them. Unless they move a bunch of people up from NXT.
There was a crazy idea that SmackDown would become like giant NXT Plus or something. Like, it'd be more like that show. They might combine them since NXT is touring. It's like a lost leader still. They don't make a lot of money. They don't make any money on this. So if they could more money in there.
You know how much a ticket to NXT costs, right?
It's usually, you mean at full sale?
Yeah, if you're not a student. If you're a student, you go for free. But if you're not a student,
tickets cost
$10. $20 for ringside.
That's not going to do it. So that's why they've been touring and they've been testing that out. Oddly enough, they're coming to Poughkeepsie in April. And I was like, is it worth it? Can I get out there? And I think floor seats were like...
totally worth it.
Floor seats were like $75. I'm going to go to NXT TakeOver again. Yeah, $70. Okay. Well, it's New York, right? So I'm going to go to TakeOver Brooklyn like I did last year, which I really liked. Thankfully, SummerSlam's in Brooklyn this year. Again, I think it's going to be this year and next year because they sold out, WWE sold out NXT, SummerSlam, and Raw like 3 days in a row. And so they were like, that's good. People like us here. So I will be going to both of those. I'm not going to Raw because it's Monday. I don't really like going on Mondays.
Well, but just I'm looking forward to that. If Shane wins, maybe you will be going to Raw.
No, I can't. Listen, I can do... 2 hours or 3 hours of NXT and then like 4 hours of SummerSlam. But to sit through another 3 hours and spend a shit ton of money on beer and pretzels and whatever the hell else I'm going to eat there, I mean, it's just not worth it. It's just very expensive. So It's like, it's basically like this is my little mini vacation where I'm like, I'm going to go sit in the box because I like sitting in a box.
Well, the other thing that was interesting about Roadblock, kind of bringing it back to NXT, is that they had so many NXT matches in there or NXT wrestlers in there.
They had
the Enzo Amore tag team match versus Dash and what's his face. But you also had Sami Zayn, who I guess is getting moved up into the main roster.
He's technically on the main roster now. That's the thing.
Oh, is he? Okay, so yeah, they moved him up. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, there were a couple of little instances there where you're like, okay, so we're getting to see a little bit of NXT stuff creeping its way into a main WWE show. So that's interesting. I don't know you know, if they're toying with moving other people up. I mean, when Enzo and Cass came out, the crowd really popped for them, and they loved his intro, which he does every time he comes out. I love that intro too. It's so over the top and ridiculous. Enzo kind of reminds me of a combination between DDP and Road Dogg.
Enzo does?
Yeah, because Road Dogg would always do the, you know, he would always start the intro live, like, oh, yeah. You didn't know? Well, except Enzo's like that, except he's like, he does his rundown about, you know, you can't teach that in his introduction. But because he's just so kind of New York, New Jersey in his delivery, that's what makes me think of DDP.
Okay, I can hear that now. I'm just thinking it's kind of like a grating voice, or like it's kind of, what's the word? Whatever, there's a word, but raspy. But yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was a decent card, I thought. For, look, WWE Network costs $10 a month. That's the other thing. I'm like, it's a show that I wouldn't have seen. It was on a Saturday. It runs whenever the hell I wanted to. It wasn't great, but it was better than Raw.
Well, the matches were fine. The matches weren't terrible in that show. It's just it didn't progress anything. It didn't serve any real purpose. Really, it was not that different from any other kind of television show or house show. So it didn't feel like a pay-per-view, in other words. It felt like it was a house show in Canada. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just it didn't feel like a pay-per-view.
I think the most interesting thing to watch besides the Triple H Dean Ambrose match, watch Chris Jericho's promo where he tries to turn, he heals the crowd. So he comes out, he's a Canadian, and he's in Toronto, and he spends about, I think, 5 minutes running down Canada to the point where they start chanting asshole at him. I'm like, that is good fucking work.
Yeah, very if good you can work. Turn
fun to watch.
If you can turn a home crowd who loves you against you, that's what a heel is supposed to be able to do. And Chris Jericho can do it, man. I mean, Chris Jericho, he might not be able to go in the ring like he used to, and he definitely can't. But he can still work the stick really well. He's still a great promo. And he can make a crowd behave the way he needs it to in order for him to tell the story that they're supposed to tell. That's a real problem with some of the other heels, is that they're not very good at manipulating the crowd to actually achieve whatever the story is supposed to be. I love the Wyatts, but I don't feel like what Bray Wyatt's promos are so nonsensical and absurd that they don't do a good job of getting the crowd to treat him as heels. They just think he's weird and neat, and he has an amazing entrance. It's like The Undertaker. He's got a really cool entrance to the ring. And the problem is that's what the crowd focuses on. So I wish that Wyatt would work on his heel persona a bit more. I mean, he wrestles like a heel, but he needs to work on it a little bit more with the crowd to get them to actually boo him so that he can play the role he's supposed to play. Right now, when he shows up, people are cheering him.
Well, I mean, they are cheering him slightly. But the other thing is, like, people stop paying attention because he says, I'm going to take you down. I'm going to win. I'm going to be like, I'll take your soul. I'll beat this guy. He never beats anybody. So, like,
that
if
is
he comes
a problem.
Out, like, it's cool. It's like, here comes old crazy Uncle Bray Wyatt. Somehow now he's got a cool entrance. It's always cool to see him. He's got his family with him. They're always fun to when you watch them wrestle or talk. But I don't believe anything he's saying. It's one thing if you're gonna say something as absurd as I'm gonna take your soul, you better at least win the match. You can't just start saying I'm gonna lose the match and start taking souls. Like, you have to win.
Yeah, he's been booked terribly. I've said this multiple times. I fully believe that Taker should have gone over Lesnar, and I think Wyatt should have gone over Taker, because I think Wyatt going over Taker would have been a powerful story. It would have been passing the torch from one monster heel to another, and then you would have, you know, Wyatt could have lorded that over the rest of the roster. He doesn't ever have to hold the championship if he was the guy who ended the Taker streak. He could really behave like a force of nature, even though his work in the ring isn't like on a level of Undertaker's. Even today, I think that would have been a much more powerful story. But they fucking screwed the pooch on that one, man. And like you said, he's been booked so weak for the last couple of years that he's lost a lot of his effectiveness.
He's and like the reverse nothing John on Cena. The,
yeah.
He's reverse,
it's nothing on the guy. People still pop for his entrance. People still pop for his entrance, but no one thinks he's going to win a match anymore.
Anyway, on that note, yeah. I'm going to put a pin in wrestling for a second.
Okay.
That was a pun by accident. April 18th. You need to get in shape for something. What is that? If you don't want to talk about it here, don't.
That's the Georgia Renaissance Festival. That's the thing I agreed. So,
okay, so I that's agreed, why you have to.
Yeah, because I agreed to step in as this character, and he's a villain in the story, and there are multiple sword fights that I have to do throughout the day. I'll be wearing a costume outside in Georgia heat, and I'll have to fight. And I can't get gassed a minute into the fight if I've got 3 more minutes of fight left. So I need to build up my cardio, and I need to lose a little. It would be great if I could lose a couple of pounds, because I'm also using a different costume than the one that I wear. And the costume I'll be using is a little snug. He'll be acting more like a girdle.
Have you thought about taking fencing lessons?
No, because real fencing and stage combat are totally different. Real fencing, you're trying your best to hit the other guy. Stage combat, you're trying really hard not to hit the other guy.
But wouldn't that get you in the right shape for exactly what you want to do, other than the pulling back on the
step? It gets you in the right shape, but you're in the wrong mentality. I mean, it's like there's certain things that it would definitely help with, but I'm more likely to do some I'm thinking about doing some kickboxing and some running. I did a couple years ago. I did kickboxing and dropped probably about 10 pounds when I was doing it, and I felt great. But then it's one of those slippery slopes, right? You start missing workout times, and then after you missed a couple, you just start making up excuses. When I say you, I mean me. And pretty soon you're just out of the habit. And, you know, it is a habit. It's something that you have to work on to do regularly in order to see results and to stay motivated. And I just one day let it slip, and then I kept letting it slip, and then I stopped. So I'm going to try and start that up again.
Sounds like we're going to do an ad for DDP Yoga now. We're not doing an ad for that.
No, I have, however, actually thought about looking into it. I just don't know, if I would.
Have you ever done yoga at all?
I've done a little bit, but only as a warm-up before a performance, because yoga is actually really good to stretch out before you do stage combat. You want to be stretched out before you do those things, because often you have to do falls or rolls, and it's much better to be loose for that kind of stuff. But that's the only time I've ever done it.
The one thing, so like I've done like yoga through like P90X and X2 and X3, whatever. So there's all these yoga things in there. And I tried DDP yoga once, but he calls all of the moves different things. So like Warrior One isn't like Warrior One. It's like tough guy pose number two or something. And it's like, okay, it's really jarring if you have a vocabulary in your head as to what to do. If you don't know anything about yoga, I think it's fine, because you're like, I mean, when I first heard Warrior One, and this is a reverse warrior, and this is Warrior Three. It's like, okay, that's what you call it. I'm okay with that. If I had learned this stuff first, where it's like tough guy pose, or he does some weird, he actually does that diamond cutter thing as a stretch. So it's like, okay, that's fine. That's good. I mean, I don't think it's any sillier than doing actual yoga, because there's some weird poses you're in. So what's the difference? But yeah, the naming convention thing kept throwing me off so badly that I was like, I can't do this. Because like, I'm like, just call it Warrior One. At least have it like, can I have a lower third that says, you know, parentheses Warrior One, so I know what I'm supposed to be doing? Because that's a problem for me.
I can imagine. I haven't done enough yoga where the pose names would definitely throw me off. But yeah, it's something that I actually thought about looking into. I haven't yet. I need to get on it. Again, because of the trip to Austin, it set me back. There was actually a pair of rehearsals that I was supposed to go to this past weekend. I told him I can't make it because I'll be on a work trip. So I need to get started like tomorrow. I mean, in order to get into enough shape where I can perform and be safe, both for myself and for my fellow performers. That's the biggest concern with stage combat, is that, you know, you've got to have trust and faith in the people you're working with, and they have to have trust and faith in you, so that you can, it's like professional wrestling, much less lower impact, but still, you have to have that trust so that you can tell the story physically with the minimal chance of someone actually getting hurt.
Okay, so on that note, we should let people know that if they want to see or listen to old episodes of this show, go to bestpodcastof2014.com or podcastwithoutpretense.com or gfqnetwork.com. You have to click a couple links, but it'll get you there eventually because we're there under Podcast Without Pretense. So remember, we're the best podcast of 2014, right?
Yes.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's right. bestpodcastof2014.com.
That's us. Anyway, next time on Podcast Without Pretense.
Holy shit. Bray Wyatt won a match.
So wait, was I supposed to start kickboxing or was I supposed to box kicks like shoes? I'm going to box the kicks.